I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur.
Through the bathroom, into the stall. Got no paper in the thing on the wall. But that's okay, cause I prefer to wipe my ass with Wolverine fur.
I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur.
Squeeze the Sherman, hell no, sir, cause I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. Wolverine fur, it can't be beat. When I rub it on my seat.
Hi, I'm Tim Grisham. And I am Will Leach. This is the Grisham Leach Podcast, episode 58 here at the New Republic. It's a very special episode, Grisham. This is when we discover we have hair in unlikely places. Ones where we realize our friend Timmy down the road has been hit by a car and we are dealing with our grief. And we also talk to you, my other friend Tim, about... We're losing you for a couple of weeks. I feel like we should let people know first off, before people get upset, before they start storming the streets, that you're taking a little break from us for hopefully only 2 weeks. Is this true, Grierson? Why have you forsaken me, and what is going on?
Yes, I feel like I need to give you a pamphlet. How to talk to your podcast co-host about being off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a hard time.
People who have been listening to the podcast from the beginning, you brave souls, may have noticed that my voice has sounded raspier over the last several weeks and months, and the reason why is because I have a polyp on my right vocal cord. I currently have on my phone absolutely disgusting photos from my ear, nose, and throat doctor of the polyp on my vocal cord that I will not share with anyone, but I've had it since about at least September of last year, and we tried different things to bring down sort of the swelling. Those didn't work, so I'm actually going to have a procedure on March the 9th to have it removed. It should be fine, nothing to worry about. However, I will not be able to speak for a week to let the surgery heal, and then the week after that, I can only talk for about 2 minutes every hour or so. I'm going to be kind of seeing my doctor. We're going to talk about it. So for hopefully only 2 weeks, I won't be on the podcast. But I will be listening. And so all of those times when I would review a movie and Will would go into the other room and assume that I would say bad things about him, and I never ever did, I'm going to be listening to see what terrible, horrible things you say about me behind my back, Will.
Yes, it's going to be weird. This podcast did not cause the polyp, did it?
No, there was no sort of specific incident that caused it. I'm sending you the bill for this.
Because I brewed you a specific kind of tea that grows polyps, so I thought that maybe that would be it. I mean, I didn't mean that you're talking to it. I just meant that your association with me and my ultimate cheering for your demise. Well, for crying out loud, obviously it's going to be weird without you for a couple of weeks. This is the Grierson Leach podcast. So to make sure no people gets too worried. A couple things. First, we have a couple fill-in hosts just for the new movies. So for the new movies, we have a couple fill-in hosts. At the end of the show, just to make sure you listen all the way through, humans, we will give you next week's host. But also, because we've known about this for a while, Grish and I have been banking reboots, which is sounds like a very bad, like, 90s comedy. Banking reboots.
That movie poster should have at least one of the actors doing a shrug.
And the other one is a robot. They're like, there's banking and reboots, and they're solving crimes, and there's a cute dog. So no, we've been banking reboots. So we've actually got a lot of reboots. So even though Grierson will not be able to talk, he will speak on this podcast from reboots that we have actually already done for future podcasts. But also we'll be having some special guests come in to take the place of Grierson, aka. When Grierson's like, hey, so my voice is fine. I'm like, are you sure you don't need to rest it for a while? And then I can just have the new person take over the show.
Why don't you drink more of this polyp-growing tea I made for you?
I've been brewing it in my lab.
that seems like a really unnecessary tea to have created.
It's very specific to this usage. But obviously, Grierson, we'll miss you for a couple of weeks. So everyone enjoy this one. But you will be hearing Grierson's voice on the next few podcasts, even if he is resting his voice and resting his polyp And I don't ever say the word polyp to me again after this context. It's weird. I just don't like hearing you say it.
I'll send you the pictures.
No, God, no. So anyway, so we'll be back. We're going to have a guest next week, and then but Grish will still be around for the reboots because we've been banking those. But first off, we need to get to this week's show. So we remind you, as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Find us on SoundCloud. Read us at thenewrepublic.com. Please rate us, review on iTunes. Email us. I always encourage everyone to email us, GriersonLeach@newrepublic.com. And, of course, give us a review on iTunes. If you give us a name of a movie you would like us to review on iTunes, we will discuss it in our reboot section, the aforementioned banking reboots. This week we have two movies for rebooting that have been rebought. The first comes to us from Tom Pagnozzi. Grierson will have an immediate flicker of recognition because Tom Pagnozzi, of course, was the catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals in the 1990s. His Tom Pagnozzi with the subject line, Tom Pagnozzi's favorite movie, 5 stars. Waking Ned Devine. It's probably not Tom Pagnozzi's favorite movie, but I love it, even though it's corny and logistically flawed. Tell me you don't well up at the ending cliff scene, and I'll show you the Ancestry.com page that proves you have no Irish in you. So our first reboot comes to us from Tom Pagnozzi, hard-nosed defensive catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals in the 1990s, and that is Waking Ned Devine. The second to us comes to us from Boxcar Fritz. Boxcar Fritz.
Those two characters should get together, I feel
Boxcar
like.
Boxcar Fritz and Tom Pagnozzi. They get in a battle with their buddies banking reboots. The subject line is fantastic. 5 stars. These two, I assume they're referring to us, Grierson, these two go together better than Lovey Smith and Illini football. It is worth noting, by the way, that this review came to us from March 7th, 2016, before the Illini went 3-9 last year. But that's okay. Please review the greatest movie ever made, The Burbs. So Boxcar Fritz says the greatest movie ever made is The Burbs. I think Grierson and I will be the judge of that. But our first discussion this week is of we have a new release, the last new release I'm going to do with you, Grierson, for a couple of weeks. Bummer, sad, but okay, that's enough of that for both of us. All right, so our first...
Please enjoy more of this polyp-inducing tea.
Yeah, I think I actually heard the polyp there. I actually heard him, and he was screaming for escape. All right, so our first movie we will be reviewing this week is Logan.
In the real world, people die.
Logan.
I don't want to talk about it.
Logan.
Just stop.
Be careful. I need the girl.
What girl?
Go get her.
Logan is the final, they swear, final Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie. This is the second straight one to be directed by James Mangold, and of course it stars Hugh Jackman as Wolverine / Logan, and alongside him is once again Patrick Stewart, also Richard E. Grant, Boyd Holbrook, Stephen Merchant as another of the mutants in this sort of post-apocalyptic future world that Logan creates, and the newcomer Daphne Keene as a young mutant that Logan has to protect. To sort of back up, I suppose, I do not consider myself an X-Men expert or aficionado. That said, I was a big fan of Days of Future Past. My understanding is that this is actually set after Days of Future Past in the future, where Wolverine, Logan, cannot heal as quickly as he used to. He's getting older, and at the same time, Patrick Stewart, who plays Charles Xavier, is very close to dying. He's ailing. Logan is protecting him in this future world where essentially they believe that there are no more mutants, that they've been wiped out. So it's the two of them and Stephen Merchant hiding out as sort of the last of the mutants. They discover that this young girl, played by Daphne Keene, is in fact a mutant. So you have sort of a Children of Men vibe kind of going on in this movie. Logan doesn't want to protect this young woman. He doesn't want to be involved. He just kind of wants to buy a boat and just be out on the ocean with Charles Xavier and just kind of leave the rest of the world behind because, frankly, what has the world ever done for Wolverine? I have many thoughts about this movie, and Will wrote the review for us for The New Republic. I have not read his review yet, so I'm really curious to talk about it. But I will start by saying this. You could not make a comic book movie more geared to me than Logan. It's a sort of a dark, not necessarily a reboot, but sort of a dark chapter in the Wolverine saga. It treats its world realistically. It's violent. It's vulgar. It's R-rated. And the idea is that this is not just Hugh Jackman's last ride in the saddle as Wolverine, but kind of putting a cap, kind of a capper on Wolverine's legacy. The movie is kind of like a Western. Hugh Jackman and James Mangold have talked about the fact that they wanted this to sort of be a Western. All of these things are entirely geared to a person like me who appreciates comic book movies that are dark and sophisticated and serious and realistic as opposed to silly. And I have to say this movie surprisingly left me pretty cold. My big problem with this movie is that though it is dark and it is violent and some of the action scenes are pretty effective, I have to confess I found the story pretty hokey for two reasons. One, I could not get past the idea of Logan protecting this young girl as being kind of this emotionally manipulative sort of thing that I didn't find all that moving, to be honest. And then the second thing is that we've talked about this with other movies, but I think it's especially true of Logan. This movie tries, in my opinion, way too hard. It has such a self-important streak to it about this is the final chapter of the Wolverine saga, and oh, what does it mean? And oh, Wolverine is kind of like moving towards some sort of sense of redemption because he doesn't want to be involved with other people, but he's going to find it within himself to care about people one more time. None of it is terribly done or poorly done, but I found it pretty cliched. So as gripping as much of it is, about halfway through this movie, I had to admit, I just didn't care very much what was happening, and that kind of proceeded throughout the entire movie.
Harrison, one of the things that people often talk to us about this podcast, they're like, oh, we love the show. Actually, nobody has ever said that. They're usually just hitting me and telling me to stop. But one of the things they always talk about is the idea that, like, you know, you guys, you obviously know each other for a long time, you get along very well, but it seems like you don't disagree that often, which is one of the reasons that Rogue One was a big thing for us, because we were clearly on opposite sides. And so I wondered if this would be one of those movies, because Logan has gotten almost universally positive reviews, and I really did not like it. So you and I are actually on that page for a couple of the same reasons. I think one, the thing that you mentioned about the story, I think is dead on. This is not particularly compelling. There's never really a notion in this movie where I don't care how much Logan curses, and boy, he gets to curse a lot because this is an R-rated movie. He gets how much he curses and growls and frets and says, I don't want any part of this. And it feels like the whole movie is just Logan being like, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to help this kid. I'm not going to do all this stuff. But there's never a moment in your mind where you don't doubt that he's going to help out. I mean, he's going to help out. And to me, that made me the only thing this movie then can rely on, because there's no real suspense as to whether Wolverine in his big last go around, it would be quite the turn if in the last Wolverine movie, he says, fuck it, I'm leaving, and actually goes. So that would be a real fitting, I suppose, last chapter for Wolverine. But he doesn't do that. So, of course, so much of the movie is just there's a part of it that feels like it almost takes the arc of a rom-com where the two people pretend they hate each other, and, you know, eventually they're going to end up falling in love at the end. The movie, it's very obvious where it's going the entire time. So the two things this movie has to rely on are really mood and the connection between him and the girl. Mood-wise, I agree with you. I think the movie is well done. Mangold clearly is investing it in something. It's important for him to get the seriousness of what the last Wolverine movie is. And they really invested in that. And I have the same kind of like emotional, like it's almost as if they tried to make The Road as like a Wolverine movie or something. So that is fine, but it's also so oppressive. One of the things I mentioned in my review was watching Deadpool, and not only watching Deadpool, but seeing the success that Deadpool had. The one thought I had was like, okay, so now they realize they can make an R-rated comic book movie, and they can make it completely violent, and they can curse, and there can be sex scenes. Oh, man, they're going to totally take a really self-serious, super dark look that's realistic, serious violence, and I'm going to hate it because that's the whole direction that these movies are going now. Like, I listen, Batman vs. Superman is not R, but it is like soulless, rated soulless is what that movie is. And there's a little part of this that's like, oh, great. So you've taken all the color and all like the joy or excitement out of superheroes already. And now they can curse and when you see and they can dismember people. Yay, I suppose. And there's a little bit of that. And I don't think that the issue, the bond between the girl and him is particularly strong. I feel like clearly it's all through Logan's eyes. It's all through, because it turns out she's a mutant, but she may have some sort of connection to Logan himself, which brings yet one more part of his character arc. And so much of it feels like a movie I've seen so many times. Also, there's just one more evil corporation that's come from, that has evil scientists who were messing around with the genetic code. Now they're after our guys. Like, forget, I know they're obviously cloning because they keep cloning scientists who clone things to go chase after the good guys for the entire movie. This is a plot I've seen a million times. This is a story arc I've seen a million times. And really, all the amount that it has to overcome in execution, while I think it does a good job in execution, I also found it ultimately just kind of oppressive.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you on being a contrarian critic, because when I reviewed this, when it premiered in Berlin, I got some really fun tweets from people who, of course, had not seen the movie. And I was the only rotten on Rotten Tomatoes at that point. And like, you know, yeah, some people just had to be like contrarians and like that. I'm like, first of all, dude, you haven't seen the movie. And second of all, boy, am I glad I'm not a woman, because it would be 10 times worse in terms of how these jerks would be. Yeah, I have to say, I am a bit baffled by how much people seem to like it. And, you know, a lot of smart people, a lot of thoughtful, smart reviews, and I just kind of go, yeah, I don't buy it. And you and I are entirely on the same page about this stuff. You know, not only is it going to be, oh, they're just going to make them like super dark, that's the direction they're going to go in, I'm also really afraid, like, are all superheroes going to get puppies and little girls now to protect? I mean, at least in John Wick, it kind of made sense, and so you got why that was. To me, X-Men and Wolverine is that, you know, the first two Wolverine movies are just sort of whatever, they're kind of forgettable. And I feel like in some ways people are like, oh, finally there's a good Wolverine movie, and they're sort of overrating this movie in a certain way. But you know, I like Days of Future Past a lot. I think that's the best of the X-Men movie. And as people know, I liked Apocalypse, which most people, including Will, did not like. So I'm not opposed to this franchise. I also just think that Patrick Stewart's kind of wasted in this movie. I feel like he doesn't have, like, and I think he's always been sort of a centerpiece to these films, and I feel like he isn't given enough. Like, Eric LaSalle shows up, and that's sort of like a remotely, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, there's a twist around the time that Eric LaSalle shows up that is potentially kind of interesting, but I feel like that isn't invested enough in terms of what it means for Wolverine as a character. I also just want to say a couple things. Number one, I've never been a big James Mangold fan. Other than his remake of 310 to Yuma, none of his movies have I really, really liked. I will always wonder what would have happened if Darren Aronofsky, who was initially supposed to do the last Wolverine and then it just didn't work out, and he did Noah instead. I'm always going to wonder what that Wolverine movie would have been. My guess is it would have been better. Also, to your point, the bad guys in this movie are not very good. I think Boyd Holbrook is kind of boring as the bad guy. And Richard E. Grant cannot play a bad guy in a movie after Hudson Hawk. You just don't take him. And listen, like, I think Richard E. Grant is hilarious. You know, I love him in L.A. Story and other things. It's hard to take him entirely serious as a bad guy because of the baggage of him being funny. It doesn't necessarily work. And then the reveal, again, not to spoil anything if you haven't seen the movie yet, but the reveal about exactly what's going on, You know, we had this discussion last year with Apocalypse, which is, oh God, you know, your argument and a lot of people's argument was, oh God, and they're one of these, like, what does it mean to be a mutant in the human world? And kind of like overextending that metaphor over and over again. There's nothing in Logan that feels like fresh as far as what that's sort of about and what it represents. And my final thing is that I understand this movie wants to be a Western. I appreciate some of that in terms of how it's shot. Again, not to spoil anything, this movie leans way too heavily on a classic Western in a way where I thought, okay, please don't do the thing I think you're going to do with that Western. And then they do. And I was like, and this, and just to, so people understand, we're going to give our grades in a second. This movie was very much on the, am I going to give it a thumbs up? Am I going to give it a thumbs down type of thing? There's a moment that happens near the end in regards to another Western where I went, nope, I'm out.
Yeah, I know exactly the moment you're talking about. And I suspect the listeners, when they see it, will know it as well. And I think you're exactly right. I think that, you know, this is... it's funny, as far as Westerns go, you mentioned 310 to Yuma. I really like 310 to Yuma. That's like a really solid Western. But one of the things that's good about 310 to Yuma that's not good about this, that's a Western that doesn't scream at you in every frame, it's a Western! This is an old-time Western! Like, it actually invests in the characters and lets them kind of have their stories and follow them through. This feels like we're making a serious comic book movie here. And it made me, we talked about Deadpool on the podcast when it came out last year. It made me want to be like, you know what, can we just have the R-rated comic book movies be Deadpool? Can we just have them be like cheerfully anarchic? Like, if you're not, I just think that the one thing I did not feel that comic book movies needed to be was darker. And it doesn't mean that you can't make a great dark comic movie. Obviously, The Dark Knight is one of our, I think each of our favorite comic book movie of all time. It's not that they can't be dark, but the idea that you are doing a dark comic book movie is not novel, and it's not interesting, and it's not new. So you need to bring something more to it. Instead, this feels like a doubling down of it. I remember the first time that Wolverine says fuck in this movie, and you can almost like feel the titters in the audience. Like, why? You couldn't say that in an X-Men movie. All stakes are off the table. Look out. Who knows what they're capable of now? And it feels ultimately kind of, again, as I said, exhausting and sort of oppressive.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. And I would also add that you don't make a dark comic book movie as some sort of penance or acknowledgement, because I feel like one of the things that, again, I think that our colleagues are overpraising the movie about is that I feel like there's this idea that somehow Hugh Jackman and James Mangold wanted to get it right this time, that they had like let down the fans or not been true to the true vision of Wolverine. And so the true vision is, it's darker and more somber, because there's an idea that there is a gravitas and like sort of saying like, we're not going to be silly anymore. We're so sorry we did that. We you know, because again, I have to out myself here. I didn't hate the first Wolverine movie, which is sort of looked at as being like the nadir of the X-Men series. I actually thought it was kind of fun and kind of pleasant, but that is now looked at as a movie as, don't do that, because like that's just too lame. You have to be darker and more serious now. And so while watching Logan, I kind of thought, gee, I've always liked Wolverine as a character, except in his own movies. I've always liked him with the gang, but on his own, I just have not been as. Because I think, we both said this, but just to repeat it, I guess that narrow through line of, I don't like people, I do like people. I mean, basically, he's like he's like Sully in Monsters, Inc. Like, oh, little girl, okay, I do like you. I'm glad we're on the same page, and
we are.
There's very few of us. There's even fewer of us than there are mutants in Logan. But we'll have to hide out together so we're not hunted down by the government or whatever.
I'd like a brief moment, by the way, because I have also gotten some of those. Why are you ruining the Rotten Tomatoes rating for Logan? Because I'm also a rotten on that. We'll get to the grades in a second. But I want to get a brief side note to talk about Armand White and Get Out. Now, you surely saw the little kerfuffle that happened this week where Armand White gave Get Out a negative review and it cost Get Out its 100% tomato rating. Now, if you remember on the podcast last week, not to toot my own horn here, but I did jokingly, not seriously, pick like someone's going to get that 100% off of Get Out. Maybe it'll be Armand White or someone. And then it was Armand White. So not people have been all over Armand White, including actual actors from Get Out. Or what's his name? The guy from Atlanta.
Oh, Stanfield, Lakeith?
Lakeith Stanfield actually called out Armand White for costing 100% Rotten Tomato rating, which A, I don't think actors should care about that. And but more to the point, B, like, whatever issues we may have with Armand White, I don't think that I do not think he is as purposefully trolling 100% of the time. And more to the point, the idea that somehow this comes out of a major general point of criticism. The idea that your own enjoyment of a movie is somehow dissipated by someone else's lack of enjoyment of it is always a little bit baffling to me. And you, yes, just like you saw with Logan, where people yelling at you for not liking the movie before they had in fact even seen it. You see this all the time. It's a weird little turn that things have taken.
I should tell listeners that I'm actually at True False right now. So I'm actually in my hotel here in Columbia, Missouri. I knew that he had given it a negative review. I had not seen the responses. So does that mean that Get Out's cynic confirmation is not going to go through since it's not 100%?
Well, no. He lied to it lied to Congress, so it's fine.
Oh, topical. My version of that was for the second Hunger Games movie, which I didn't like, and I was like, I think the only person for a long time, and I was like, I'm going to stay off social media for a few days. It just seems like a good idea for once. And again, thank goodness I'm not a female critic, because it would have been 25,000 times worse. But it's like there are those moments where you are – and I have to say, we actually got a tweet. Someone tweeted at us a couple weeks ago saying, if you're in the minority or you're the only person that didn't like a movie, do you rethink it? And I wasn't sure if that was in relation to Logan or just whatever. And I have to say that just for myself, I tend to think, oh, that's because there's so many critics that I think, oh, I'm in a very, very small minority that either liked something or didn't like something. I don't think I ever necessarily rethink it, but I'm definitely kind of curious about why my reaction was different than so many other people's.
Yes, there are out of 134 reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes, 9 of them did not like it, and 2 of them are on this podcast.
Hi,
so,
Mom.
Hey, how's it going? So what did you ultimately give it?
I gave it a C+.
Yeah, that's exactly what I gave it to. We're on the same page. We are the people. We are, Matt Toon, Illinois is bringing down Logan's Rotten Tomatoes rating, and for that I say, you're welcome, America.
Yeah, I have to say, just since we didn't talk about Hugh Jackman at all, I will always like him as Wolverine, and I like him in this movie too, but it's funny how I like him less and less as the movie gets more and more kind of predictable as it goes along.
Turns out Logan does learn to love after all. He still has love in his heart.
I told you that he still had love in his heart. No, but at the beginning,
all he did was drink and say how he didn't care about anything, so I believed him.
He said that, but he protests too much.
Yeah, in retrospect, I guess I should have seen that coming.
Logan, he protests too much.
I don't know if I want to watch that sequel. All right, so that is Logan. Now we go to our reboot section. Our first reboot movie is Waking Ned Devine.
A winner in the village, in Tullymore itself.
I think I know who's won. That's mighty, for I have an idea. I know myself.
I'll sit them down, feed them up, and join the night. You find the winner?
Well, hello, Mrs. Kennedy.
I've a chicken leg left over. It means someone was missing.
Ned, are you in there?
Now, I wanted to talk to someone about a claim that I've been making.
Waking Ned Devine, or just Waking Ned, as it was called in Europe. And in Ireland, where it's from. It's written and directed by Kirk Jones. It came out in 1998. It stars Ian Bannon, David Kelly, Fiona Flanagan. I'm going to mispronounce so many Irish names in this. And remember, my mother's maiden name is Dooley. Like, I have no excuse not to be able to do Irish names. But what can I say? I'm an ugly American. This Waking the Divine takes place in Tullymore, which is a tiny Irish village of 52 people. We meet the best friends, Jackie and Michael. They are hanging out one day, and we realize that Jackie picks up a newspaper and realizes that someone in their tiny village has won the Irish National Lottery. So he hosts a party in his house to find out who it is, and there's all sorts of charming Irish people doing charming Irish things. But they can't find the person who had the ticket. They can't find the person who won. After they all kind of have suspicions as who's the one, who's hiding something. It turns out none of them at the party are there. They realize there's one person left, Ned Devine. So they go to his house and realize Ned Devine had a heart attack when he realized that he won the lottery. Turns out Ned Devine was a very, very nice man. So Jackie, and to a lesser extent Michael, who's just kind of supporting him, decides that they will cash the ticket, have Michael pretend that he is Ned Devine, and have the entire village come together and then split the money among all of them themselves. This is all done in this very charming, light, frivolous, kind of silly way that I will confess, at the time when I saw this movie, I found almost overwhelmingly charming. I found the village that they put together here, the way that everybody hangs out, the care they have for one another, the way each other they give each other crap. I found it very charming then, and there's still an element of charm to it now. I will say though, this movie struck me as a lot more cloying than it did in 1998. Now I wonder if some of that is perspective, in that you see, like, this is, it turned out that Kirk Jones ended up directing My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 and What to Expect When You're Expecting, and some pretty lousy movies after this that I think have some that I'm now seeing the DNA of in this, in that, as charming as it is and as enjoyable as these actors are, there's not a moment where the movie is not constantly winking at you and constantly nudging you and constantly nuzzling up into your neck and saying, look at me, aren't I a wee charming lad? I can't believe I've made it this far into discussing Waking the Divine without doing that.
That's an exact quote from the movie.
Yeah, I'm a wee charming lad. You know, when you come back from your polyp surgery, you're just gonna talk like that. It's gonna, like, your polyp has been keeping you all these years of talking like you were from
my doctor did tell me there was a 5% chance of it. Yes, that there was.
I think people would like it. I think people would be into it. I will say, like, there's a lot of there's still some charming moments, but I found it's funny because you and I, a big debate movie we had a debate about a few years ago, was a movie called Young at Heart, which is a documentary about these people that live in a retirement community who form like a singing group, and it's very charming, and I liked it a lot more because I'm a little bit more of a sucker for those kind of movies, even against my better judgment sometimes. And now I'm realizing Waking Ned Devine was one of those movies, because I don't know if I've lost it a little bit, but I'll confess, Waking Ned Devine, I found it, while still a little charming, I found it a little bit too winking and at times even a little irritating.
So you're saying that your ancestry background will show that you actually don't have any Irish blood, as our
just a wee bit of blood.
Oh, I set you up on that one, didn't I? Okay. I had actually never seen this movie. You know, there are times where I will skip certain movies because I think to myself, do I need to see that? Am I going to like that? And I'll think to myself, I don't think I'm going to like that. And so that's actually one of the great values of the reboot section, is giving me an opportunity to watch some of this stuff. I had no internal wrestling matches, as it sounds like you did. It is charming. It is cute. Also, it is charming and cute. And by the way, it's also charming and cute. I would have loved for it to be darker. I don't think you would have lost any of the humor or the heart of it. And the movie just kind of keeps pushing towards making you think it's going to be, and there's certainly, you know, dark moments. This movie is almost 20 years old, so I can say this without worrying about spoiling it. You know, characters are killed off in comical ways for the convenience of the plot in this film. And so you do get a sense that there is a darker idea about, okay, this guy is dead. We're going to tell ourselves that Ned wanted us to enjoy this money, and so we should pretend, we're going to have Michael pretend that he's Ned and try to pull a fast one on the, lottery judge or whatever. And so there's like a darker, more twisted movie in Waking Ned Divine. And I found myself wanting that one because I think it's a little too one-dimensional as it is. I forget which critic at the time called this the half Monty. I think that's pretty like accurate because I haven't seen the full Monty since it came out, but that movie worked on me really well because it's a feel good movie. It's kind of silly and kind of hokey, but you really got a sense of that, the relationship of those characters and kind of like their, working class lives. And so there was a real sense of, it wasn't just like middle-aged guys are taking off their clothes and dancing or whatever. It's also about, a community of people, and they've kind of lost their sense of themselves, and that had more emotional stakes. There isn't, I don't feel like, enough in this because it's too cutesy as opposed to really making you feel the Michael and Jackie relationship. There's a moment near the end where Jackie has to think quickly and change the name of who he's talking about at the funeral. And I found myself thinking, when he's saying all that stuff about his friend, like, gosh, I wish I had felt that more while watching the movie. So it's not necessarily just I'm a curmudgeon who doesn't like, joy and sweetness. I feel like it's done so much without really kind of establishing it or really kind of grounding it in a way so that when there's real kind of heartfelt moments, it works. And so, person who requested this, the former catcher for the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, like, the ending kind of gets me, but I watched it thinking, this should get me more than it is. Like, that's, mm-hmm. This scene is set up in a way where it should really, like get me teary-eyed or whatever, and it didn't for me.
Yeah, and it is. It's funny that it's one thing to establish characters. This movie goes to the old man on a moped, sometimes naked on a moped joke a couple too many times for me, I'll confess, this time. Also, this village, I do not like the long-term survival rate in this village to do well, because I think there are only 3 young people and 1 woman. So this village, apparently everybody left 30 years ago because everybody's 80 or above in this village.
Yeah, I think everybody left because they're like, I can't deal with these overly cutesy people. We've got to get the hell out of here. Like, it's just too much.
Yeah, and it is, because it's funny you talk about how it hints at darker things. It's because the movie is almost too self-consciously whimsical to even acknowledge that, hey, a lot of these people are being really greedy. And, like, maybe we're actually driven by greed and not this, like, we're just this charming village. And sure, maybe Ned wouldn't have actually wanted this. There's the movie hints at it. I can't tell if it hints at it or it's just that the story naturally lends itself to it and the movie just flies by. Like, nope, we're not that kind of movie. And you shouldn't be that type of person for thinking that people might be greedy in this situation. But it doesn't seem to take place in the actual planet where people actually live.
Yeah, this is a movie that I refer to as a mom movie, meaning that my mom has not seen this, but if she did see it, I know that she would love it, and I know that she would be very disappointed in me for not liking it. I feel my guilt, my mother son guilt, in terms of, because if I talk to her about the things that we're talking about right now, like, yeah, but it doesn't really kind of do this or like this. I know the look that she would give me of just like, why are you like this? I did not raise you this way. So I'm sorry, Mom.
Why can't you just like things?
This is a classic 90s Fox Searchlight movie, I have to say. This is like one of those ones where it's like, there's something to be said for a movie that plays probably to a slightly older audience. And, it was a pretty decent, indie hit in the UK and also here as well. But I can't say that the last 20 years of my life have been poorer because I had never seen this before, like this week.
I do like the fact level close in this, that it allowed us to bring up what to expect when you're expecting, which I think is, Chris, is that like one of your least favorite movies of the last 10 years?
Well, I was actually wondering if that would come up in conversation. That's like my trigger warning. That movie is absolutely wretched, which I wrote about for us back in the Deadspin days. That movie is terrible. He also did one of the Bridget Jones movies, the most recent one, I think, or one of them. I forget which one. But so Kirk Jones has like moved on and done other things. And I like Waking Ned Divine better than anything else. I haven't seen Nanny McPhee, so I can't speak to all of his work. But yes, to answer your question, that is one of the worst movies of the last 10 years. Chris Rock, what were you thinking?
All right. So that is Waking Ned Divine. Grierson Leach, disappointing moms for more than 25 years.
Moms and comic book fans this week. We are just...
Yeah, but mostly moms.
Mostly moms. Always,
we have a lot of history. A lot of history of disappointing moms. All right, so that is Waking Ned Divine. We wrap up this episode with our final reboot, which is The Burbs.
All Tom Hanks wanted was a quiet vacation at home.
This is what I need, Carol. I need this.
Welcome to Mayfield Place. A typical street in the burbs.
Morning, Walter!
Where nothing much ever happened.
Walter's dog just took a dump on Rumsfeld's lawn again.
Until the Klopex moved in.
Klopex?
Klopex.
Klopex.
No one goes in, no one comes out.
Neighbors from hell.
The Burbs came out in February of 1989. It was directed by Joe Dante, and stars Tom Hanks, a year removed from his Oscar nomination for Big. Tom Hanks plays a guy named Ray, who lives in a nondescript suburban community around his nondescript suburban friends. And here's what happens. There is someone, there's these people who seem pretty weird, who move into a house nearby. They heard a rumor that at their previous place, the place burned down. They don't trust them. They wonder what's going on. They decide to do some investigation. Tom Hanks' character, Ray, is actually taking a week off from work, and rather than going to the beach with his lovely wife, Carrie Fisher, he decides that he's going to spend his entire week sort of investigating exactly what's going on with these new people in his neighborhood. There are several classic, I'm putting classic in quotes, classic 80s comedies that I have never seen. And the usual response that I get when I tell people I haven't seen a certain movie is they cannot believe I've not seen it. The typical response goes like this. You've never seen The Burbs? Pause. It's so great. And then I tend to do this. I kind of look into their eyes, and I try to see how I'm going to let them. This whole podcast is about disappointing people. Allow me to disappoint the men of my age group. Joe Dante is a beloved cult filmmaker. I don't think this is one of his good movies. I think that it's kind of a mess. I think it is filled with characters who aren't nearly well drawn enough or funny enough to really kind of sell the concept that, hey, the suburbs are wacky, or the suburbs have this kind of like weird evil kind of lurking underneath the placid surface and like that. I think Joe Dante has done more subversive work in other movies that he's done. I don't feel like The Burbs is one of those ones. It actually feels like more of a mainstream him like trying to do like a Tim Burton-esque kind of thing. And I found it to be a real curiosity watching this movie, but I can't say I laughed all that much watching it.
Yeah, it does feel like him trying to do a studio movie straight, but with a little Joe Dante stuff. And I think he loses the thread. I think this movie's a total mess. I think it's not funny. This is also, we did a Tom Hanks rankings for Vulture, and I it'd been a long time since I'd seen this movie, and I thought of it more fondly than I frankly should have. So it's a little higher on that list than it probably should be. This is not a good Tom Hanks performance. And what he does, he's when Tom Hanks, when he was younger, he had this physical comedy quality that was very appealing. And he could be kind of unhinged in a way that was both a little loopy and also kind of relatable. Here, it just kind of feels slack. It just kind of feels... Part of the reason is that he's supposed to be playing someone that's a little bit bummed out. One of the things that's weird about this movie, I wonder if this is a studio thing, is first off, no one in the suburbs seems to ever go to a job. And ever, which is weird because the whole thing of living in the suburbs is that you go in to another place to have your job. Otherwise, you could just live in that place. So it's weird that, and so the thing with, they've, to have excuse that Tom Hanks' character is going to be home all week, I think at a better movie or a more interesting movie, he would have like just gotten laid off, or he would have just gotten fired from a job that he was that he loved, and he was sitting around with his lacking of a sense of purpose, and he was depressed, and it would be a little darker. Here, he's just on vacation for a week and doesn't want to go to the lake house, and his character is just a kind of a nothing burger character. He just kind of roams around, and he's kind of suspicious occasionally, but doesn't. There's no driving thing to him, and so Hanks has to do a lot of heavy lifting in this movie in a way that I don't. Don't think benefits him particularly well. I'll put it that way. Speaking of roles that don't fit them particularly well, I don't know if there were montages in the wake of the sad death of Carrie Fisher, of her greatest, most inspiring performances. This is not one of them. She is not bad. She's Carrie Fisher. She's inherently kind of fun and charming and interesting, playing a zilch of a character, like an absolutely zero character. And I there are so many times I kept wanting to like, just let Carrie Fisher say what's ever currently on her mind. And it will be more interesting than what is anything this character has to say. These are not interesting. This is also, it's also worth noting, I don't think Rick Dukeman had a particularly big comic relief career after this. It is not difficult to see why. There is I think he's a stand-up comedian. He's in Groundhog Day, I believe. He's a stand-up comedian who this movie seems to think is absolutely hilarious, and I might debate them on that point.
Yeah, if you're going to see a movie with Henry Gibson and Carrie Fisher together, that's a comedy, stick with Blues Brothers. I just feel like that's the better of the two. That's why I mentioned the whole fact that Tom Hanks was in Big the year before. It's so weird because you watch this and you think, oh, does this Tom Hanks guy like not know like what he should be doing with his career? Because especially after Big, and how these things are timed, I never know the answer to that. But it's like this movie feels like something that Tom Hanks does not need to be doing, even at that point in his career, because he doesn't even have that kind of like, you would think that this movie would work well if he's like the regular guy and everybody else is nuts. And so his quiet sanity is funny in relation to everybody else. But that doesn't even exactly work. In this movie, I just sort of watched this film. I wouldn't say I hated it, but I just sort of watched it going, what is this? Like, what's actually happening in this movie? And then we've talked about this with other 80s comedies or other sort of like period, films. Like, is this commenting on something that was important at the time? We were both teenagers when this movie came out. So it's not like it's like, from the 1920s, and we're totally, removed from its cultural context. I just sort of watched it and thought, there's nothing here. The one thing I actually wish that it turned out that that Henry Gibson and his posse actually had not done anything. And that, there's a moment where Tom Hanks goes like, we're actually the weirdos or whatever. Where I thought, oh, that's kind of a clever idea. And then they go, nope, turns out that wasn't it either.
Yeah, there's an obsession, and you wonder the time frame. Like, the suburbs were really kind of coming into their own at the time. And, this was a time where there were tons of you mentioned Tim Burton earlier, but to me, like, this is a whole movie based around the literal one scene in Edward Scissorhands where everyone comes out and mows their lawns at the exact same time. Like, this is a whole movie about that idea that one scene gets across so much better than anything this movie's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of like placing it historically, I guess. So Blue Velvet came out a few years before this. Edward Scissorhands comes out like a year after that. So you do have this like the suburbs, am I right? But both of those movies are way better than this one. So
yeah, and it's weird. Getting back to Dante, maybe we'll wrap up with Dante, because he is, you know, it's funny. Another reboot movie that someone has asked us to do is Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which is very beloved by like a lot of people that I kind of wish we would have maybe gotten to before this one, because this, you know, think of like a movie like even Small Soldiers is a really fun movie in that regard. You know, like what Dante does really well is he get Interspace, Gremlins, like, you know, his segment in The Twilight Zone, I think, is generally considered to be one of the good ones there. It's weird that it feels like him trying to have his, not Back to the Future, but to have his, like, my sensibility could go big, and it never feels dark enough. It never feels both dark enough, but it also never feels funny enough. So it just kind of feels zilch. My last thing on Joe Dante, I didn't realize that he directed 2 episodes of Police Squad. This makes me love Joe Dante even more than I already did.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I need to go back. Why will no, of the 20 trillion cable channels out there, why will none of them show Police Squad? I would love to see.
It's the Naked Gun, except you don't have to deal with OJ. It's just great.
And you get to see some of the jokes from the original Naked Gun in the TV show. They basically borrowed for the movie. So I did not know that. That is an excellent factoid. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, so that is The Burbs. We just hated everything this week, Kristen.
Yeah, we took our sour pills, I guess, this week. Yes.
Yeah. So, well, do those help the polyp? Do they reduce the polyp?
I sound pretty good right now, so I guess so, yeah.
Man, I want you to come back Irish. Please let that happen.
I make no promises. All right.
So, all right. So just to give you, I promise you guys, I would let you know who would be our guest in the next episode. The movies we'll be discussing Kong Skull Island, which is the new, if you can remember which order all those words go in and where the colon goes, you win the Cupid doll. We'll also be discussing Personal Shopper, the new film with Kristen Stewart. Grierson will be reviewing that. You're able to type. You're not able to talk, but you'll still be able to write things for The New Republic, correct?
Yes, my fingers will not be affected, thankfully.
I don't want to see what your fingers look like with polyps. That seems terrifying. But maybe your fingers are Irish. Now I've lost the thread. So my guest next week, it'll be no Grierson, but I'm very happy to have on our friend Mark Lasanti. Mark Lasanti will be filling in for Tim next week. We're going to have a different guest every week, but this week it will be Mark Lasanti. He works for MTV. He worked for Grantland there. He worked with us at our old Yahoo site, The Projector. I think that's where we got to know him very well. He's also famous for starting the website The Famer, which is what I basically modeled Deadspin on way back in the day. Mark Lasanti is one of the funniest, one of my absolute favorite people in the world, and he's no Grierson. He's so much better.
He is so much better. This is what I was talking about, ladies and gentlemen. I said I'm going to be listening very carefully to see what's going to be happening. No, I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm thrilled Mark's going to be on the show. I can't wait to hear what he thinks of Kong Skull Island. Kong: Skull Island.
Yeah. Yeah, I specifically wanted to make sure to have him on to do that one. Of course, also, one of my favorite things that Mark is mostly an editor. He doesn't do a lot of writing anymore, but he did the Mad Men Power Rankings for Grantland. Started on his personal Tumblr, and then they ended up going to Grantland and are among the, like, I liked Mad Men, but man, I loved watching the show, and then I would just like email him directly after the show. Are they ready? I loved the Mad Men Power
Rankings. I feel like we're not giving enough appreciation and love for his Derek Jeter journal, though. Now, I have to say, Jeter retiring, it made me kind of sad because that would be the end of the journal. But yes, I'm thrilled Mark's going to be in my place next week.
Yeah. So, and when I think there's going to be one more show, but one more show where Grierson will be gone, and then hopefully you'll be back. We won't even have noticed that you were gone.
Yes. Though I may sound slightly a wee bit more Irish. I can't do it properly yet. But next time I talk to you, perhaps I'll have the lilt.
Okay, well, let's try. This is practice a couple words, okay? Perhaps some Irish phrases.
Okay.
Shrimp on the bobby.
That's not Irish.
Racist. Also, we have a reboot next week. However, we do have a reboot because that we've already done. We will be rebooting A Fish Called Wanda. We'll be doing an 80s comedy that maybe we'll like, actually. But we'll be doing A Fish Called Wanda. We've already taped that one. So Grierson's voice will be coming back from the polyp of the grave and returning. Grierson, I'm going to miss you for the next couple of weeks. Can we chat? Can you send me updates?
Well, I can have Susan talk for me, my wife, if you'd like. I'll write something to her, and then she can tell you what I said. It'll be like the piano. It'll be kind of like that.
Anyway, Grierson, I will miss you. Be safe. Don't send me a picture of the polyp, either currently or after the surgery.
Done. No problem. No. I will definitely send it to you. No problem.
All right. Good luck. Hang in there. We'll be back next week with me and Mark Lasanti. Grierson, feel better. Get that thing out of there. Get healed. We want to get you back here as soon as we can.
I appreciate it. I'll be back soon. Don't worry.
All right. But see everyone. We'll be back with Mark Lasanti next week. Give him the last word, Grierson.
Bye.
Bye. I got the last word anyway. Bye.
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 Damn it.
Here we go now. Check it out. To the rhythm of the funky vibe, so I can get busy just one more time. To the beat and you don't quit. It's that old school rap with that new school hit. Beat a pipe and pick a pimp up a cool rap to rock, and I can still rip up the house. Every goddamn time I get on the mic, they'll go crazy. Peace out to CeeLo Flex and Doug Lazy. I bet you never knew, but now you know I'm the undisputed king of this disco. And I never let the mic magnetize me no more, cause DJ Kool rip up the whole damn flow. Now I'ma rock the rhyme with the greatest of fees, and swinging like a man on the flying trapeze. And if you don't like it, you grab on these. And now I need some help for the right show, please. Jam! Yeah. Ha! So look at here. Check the flavor of the rhythm I wrote. And while I get a chance here, let me clear my throat. Oh! Have mercy, babe. Ha! I hope they don't die. Let me clear my throat. I need these monitors right here. Music in the monitors. And it's gonna look something like this here.